Hi guys, this is Gail. Just a quick note up front to say that this interview was recorded on January 27th, and final edits went through on February 3rd. Where there are some references to current events, keep these dates in mind. There's been a lot in the news relating to our public lands. Every day, there is a new development. The core lessons that we talk about with Katie Bouet on this episode are timeless and empowering. Okay, let's start the show. This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Oru Kayak. They design folding kayaks that can go virtually anywhere, thanks to their lightweight and folding design. Stay tuned for later in the episode. We talk with Stephanie Wright, a member of the She Explores team, about how the Oru Kayak helps her merge her city life with her outdoor life. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
Use your fire to really motivate you and to drive you into action, but we're all in this together, so we have to be thoughtful about the ways that we go about this fight. We don't want to alienate people anymore. We want to bring everyone together in unity.
This is Katie Bouet. She wears many hats, but we focus our conversation with her about being a resource for people, young and old, across the outdoor industry. Over the past year, she has become the megaphone for using social media as an advocacy tool. At 28, one might warrant her young to be well on her way to becoming an outdoor industry veteran, but technology speeds everything up. A proud Miami native with Cuban, Irish, and Venezuelan heritage, Katie made a name for herself as the writer behind her blog, The Morning Fresh, while writing with vulnerability about her experiences hiking, climbing, and trying new sports like trail running. She also profiled her life on the road in a yellow Sprinter van. More recently, she took the social media reins at the Outdoor Industry Association, or OIA, bringing their Instagram following to over 10,000 in under 2 years. There she learned what she already knew. Social media is a powerful tool. She's since gone freelance from her full-time role with OIA, but she considers herself a full-time advocate for the outdoors. A theme for this episode is what Katie said right off the bat. We're all in this together. We can all be advocates for conservation and public land, and we have a lot of power in the phones that we carry in our pockets.
We can jump right in. I mean, I think that's kind of the spirit of 2017, right?
We jumped right in. When I talked to Katie on January 28th, our new president had just put a media gag order on several government agencies, including the National Park Service. An executive order had been signed to advance approval of the Dakota Access and Keystone XL pipelines. The future of our public lands was up in the air, and they're still up in the air. I was feeling pretty powerless and very uninformed. I wanted to talk with Katie about how I can stay on top of issues and make an impact without feeling overwhelmed. Katie's belief that conservation is a bipartisan issue was really encouraging.
I think conservation and outdoor recreation as well are places where it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican. It doesn't matter what you think about immigration or taxes or anything like that. Conservation just makes sense, and everyone can get around it together. I've seen in the industry a lot of division between conservation and recreation groups, which I have always thought is very funny. And to me, it straight up doesn't make sense. We're all here for the same thing. We're all here to protect public lands. And that's something that is such a universal bipartisan issue. You know, whether you're a biker, a climber, a cyclist, a skier, we all love these public lands so much. And no matter how you move through them, no matter how you experience them, you can come together around this idea of wanting to protect them.
On that note, do you have any advice for listeners who might want to talk to family or friends that might not share their own beliefs about public land?
I think really when you're talking to friends or family who haven't sat at your table of beliefs before, while this is, you know, the situation of you trying to explain to them your position, the first step is to sit down and quietly listen to their perspective, because I think that'll really inform the way that you offer them understanding from your spot in the world, is to understand where they come from first. And to see how you can fit their perspective of the world into your view of public lands and how you can shape that to affect them. It's hard sometimes because you can get so emotional, and it's really easy to get frustrated, I think, with our family members like this. But I think listening and understanding and knowing that they might not get on board with that conversation, you know, don't go into these conversations thinking you're going to walk away totally transforming someone's perspective. You're here to plant a seed, and that seed is going to go on the ground with that conversation. And then you over time are going to water it a little bit, hope some sunshine hits it. And then maybe a little tiny like plant of new thought is going to pop up one day. So it's about listening and patience and perspective.
That new thought can come from you too when you listen to the family member or the friend in gaining their perspective. It can feel like we're not listening enough at times, especially when looking on social media, because everyone's able to kind of shout out of their microphone. It's hard to know if somebody else is listening or not. So I appreciate that note of listening, because it is really valuable.
And that's so true. You know, we have social media as like this megaphone through which we can just spew our thoughts and information all day. And I think it's a really important habit to create if you're going to be a social media activist or advocate, is to make sure you spend time every day just listening, not speaking, not taking up space, just listening and absorbing and understanding and supporting other people.
A lot of people like you who care about public lands and conservation and environmental protection are really scared and also really angry right now. Do you have any suggestions for translating those emotions into action?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the first things that maybe we don't talk about enough is letting yourself process that. I think first and foremost, it's really easy to be angry right now, and it would be really easy to take your anger out just straight on social media, like some people in higher office have been doing. And I think that we can learn from that example that that's maybe not the best way to go about. Thinking before we speak is the first step right now, and really processing everything that you're feeling and figuring out where you want to channel all this energy. I've never seen so much energy in the outdoor community and just in our entire nation. And so I think that it's really important that we figure out how we want to use all of that energy and make sure that we make it impactful.
Yeah, because it's easy to, you know, for me sometimes to feel like just saying something is doing something, but it's not necessarily. It's really easy to share a Facebook post and be like, somebody else knows about this now. I did something. But how can we use social media to actually enact change?
There's definitely that danger in the kind of Twitter slacktivism. Tweeting about the issue means I took a stand, even though it was just a tweet. But I think where social media really plays in here is the documentation and the amplification of all these efforts and movements and the spreading of information. I think we've really seen that with this rogue national parks and federal organizations, Twitter movement, that information is so key and people are really willing to step up to fight for information. And social media is a great place to spread that. That's where I've been learning about all these bills that come out. Things are happening so, so fast. Having social media as an instant place to get that information and then rally people together to take things off screen and really come together in real life for action. I think that's where social media is just so invaluable. It's so precious to this fight we have now.
Social media is really powerful in that way, but what are the downsides that you see it has, like as it relates to activism?
Oh, I think it's really easy to feel like you've accomplished something and ultimately diminish the potential you have for creating action. I know I'm guilty of this. I only just started calling my senators directly in the past few months. And I would always share things like, hey, we need a call. We need to write these letters. And it was like this satisfaction of having shared it on social was almost as good as having actually taken the action. And it's scary to call your senators. The first time I called my senator, I was terrified. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what I was going to say if they kind of came at me with like a rebuttal question that I wasn't prepared for. So I think Twitter and social media provide a safety blanket to hide behind. And I think it's really important now in 2017 more than ever for us to step out from the safety of our laptops and our smartphones and take our passion into the real world, because that's where it makes the impact. When you're having these conversations, when you're writing letters, when you're marching in the streets, that is where you're really creating the impact. And social media supports it. It's so important, but it's not the end all be all.
So what's an example of hearing something on social media and then thinking, I want to do something, I want to call someone, but I don't know who to call? What is something actionable that you could do in that instance?
What I've been seeing a lot of, and I would love to see this trend continue, is spreading this information. So finding out, you know, the House just passed a bill selling off public lands. And what I've been seeing is, instead of people just sharing a post that says, you know, here's the link to this, I'm outraged, it's here's a link to this, I'm outraged, and here I'm going to copy and paste the script that was provided by whatever organization to help you communicate to your senator when you call. Here's the number. Here's a website you can go to where you type in your zip code and it'll let you know who your representatives are, and it'll let you know their email address, their mailing address, their phone number. So it's this proliferation of information and resources that I'm seeing. And I think that's really powerful, because it's great to spread the information, but if you don't provide a call to action, if you don't provide means for someone to take it the next step, they're not going to take that next step. We need to empower people through social media.
What is the most important thing to do if you want to communicate with a senator? Is it calling? Is calling the most important thing that you can do? Or is it doing all four of those items?
I am over eager. So I'm going to say doing all four of those things is really what you should do. But I have been hearing a lot, and through some of my work with the government affairs team at OIA, what I've really heard is that calling makes such a huge impact. It's personable. You're speaking to another human directly in that moment. Like, you can't escape it. You can't avoid it. And I think that that's where the real power is. And of course, social media is so impactful too, when you get a huge boom together. Like when Protect Our Winners had their Keep Paris campaign, that was such a loud boom. That was inescapable, much in the same way that talking to someone directly is inescapable.
Mm. So you said that you were nervous about getting a question asked of you the first time that you called. Have you had any questions asked of you after reading a script, like going into it prepared? And have you ever felt like, I don't know what to say next?
No. So I would say that the little stigma or whatever anxiety I had about calling my senators was totally unfounded. More often than not, lately, I've been getting full mailboxes in the past week. I think they've really gotten a deluge of phone calls, which I'm all for. Been leaving a lot of messages, or having to call back, or having to reframe my outreach into an email. But yeah, I really haven't gotten anything that's scary or, you know, intimidating. And I think that if I did, it would be a learning opportunity. You know, we all have so much to learn right now on every side of the spectrum. There's so much learning to be done.
We found a few websites and apps that can make finding that script and knowing who to call and what to say that much easier. www.fivecalls.org, that's five as the number five, is one. You can pick the issues you care about, put in your zip code, and get step-by-step instructions of who to call and what to say. democracy.io is good for sending emails, and Countable is another app that keeps you informed on the issues and allows you to express your opinions on them. Time will tell how effective the apps are, but we think that awareness is a great first step. If you know of any resources and would like to share, we'll be compiling a list on Katie's podcast landing page on she-explorers.com. Now, a quick word from our sponsor, Oru Kayak. The folks at Oru Kayak believe that connecting to nature is a deep human need, even for those of us who live in cities. We talked to Stephanie Wright, a member of the She Explores team, and an all-around great human being, about how the Oru Kayak helps her experience nature while living in urban Seattle.
An Oru Kayak folds down to the size of a big box. You can store it behind your couch, and then a nice day comes along, or you and your friends want to go out paddling, you can store a few of them, which is really cool. I have a small car because I live in the city, and I could pack two or three of the Oru kayaks in my car, which is much more convenient than having a rack on the top of your car, I think. On New Year's Eve, 2 years ago, we took our Oru kayaks out and set up our kayaks and then paddled out in time to watch the fireworks at midnight. To be able to do something like that without having to have these huge, massive vessels is pretty amazing.
Load up your car and get on the water in a beautiful, foldable Oru kayak. Learn more at www.orukayak.com. That's www.orukayak.com. I saw you tweeted the other day that you called people on your Instagram to be activists and to learn, and you got, I don't know how many emails, but do you ever feel overwhelmed in trying to respond to everyone and being that person for other people who are looking to you?
Yes. I was not expecting to, I guess, assume the role that I found myself in the past 6 months. Snooze actually just called me. I was reading this article. I'm looking at it right now. They called me that I'm leading the industry as an advocate. And that's so amazing to me, but that's also really scary and that's heavy. And looking at those, you know, all those Instagram messages too, I still haven't responded to all of them. And I feel this like huge guilt, but I want to be there. Like I want to, you know, there are people that are asking me to empower them and I want to empower them. I want to give them the resources. I want to support them and encourage them. But yeah, it does sometimes feel like, man, what have I gotten myself into? am I qualified for this? I ask that a lot. Like, am I qualified for this, Gail? I'm not really sure.
How do you think you got here?
I think I know that a lot of it was faking it until you make it. I think I really got started with my job with OIA, and that was very much a fake it till you make it, try things out and hope they work. And I think that ultimately my passion is what's gotten me this far. I love this. This is my life. Like this consumes me. All of this work it's the reason I get up every morning. It's the reason I do everything I do. I guess maybe being a little pushy and faking it are how I've gotten here.
And doing a good job. So learning as you go.
Know. Thank you.
You did go to school for writing, right? And that comes through in a tweet if someone can write a sentence well that's compelling and grabs your attention. It's really valuable.
Yeah, and I think that I mean, that's definitely, I think that is ultimately, that's why I'm here, is the storytelling ability. And I think that's part of what is so important with social media and this activism and advocacy and storytelling is so important. Someone in Michigan won't be impacted by the Women's March in Park City unless it's online, like unless we have a way to share that story. And what's so magical about social media is that it connects people all over the world.
Have you ever thought about going into politics?
No. If it was like a situation like Stars Hollow and Gilmore Girls, like I would love to be the mayor of Stars Hollow. That sounds great. But I think I like fighting the fight from where I am right now.
Maybe I'm naive, but I feel like a lot of politicians start by fighting the fight and then they get caught up in the bureaucracy. Or maybe that's just a bad movie that I watched.
No, I could totally see that. Talk to me in 10 years. I've had this really weird thing happen where after like 4 or 5 years of being pretty nomadic, I have fallen so deeply in love with Salt Lake City. And I've started getting active on a local level here, especially around, you know, air quality issues. Mm-hmm. I could see that happening. I don't want that to happen, but I could see that happening.
What do you love about Salt Lake City?
There's so much to love about Salt Lake City. I really fell in love with the city in the summertime. The mountains here are so incredible for running and climbing and anything you could possibly want to do. But the city culture is what really captivated me. There's this incredible outdoor community here. There's an excellent kind of hipster food and art and culture scene down here. But what really drew me to Salt Lake City and Utah is this fight for public lands. I was in Colorado for a hot second, and Colorado really has it on lock. They've got Hickenlooper. They have Luis Benitez. They're good. You know, they really understand the value of public lands. They understand the importance of the outdoor recreation economy. Like, they don't need me anymore. But Utah really needs some support. We need people here on the ground every day fighting for public lands. So that fight is kind of what drew me here. The fight in the mountains.
It is really beautiful. Like, they're so close. Like, it feels like it's like a movie backdrop. Doesn't feel real.
Yeah, I love it. I can actually, after this podcast, I'm going to go run from my front door. I can run to the foothills and start getting up into the mountains. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So why do you think that people in Utah don't necessarily value the land the same way that you do? Where are the priorities not aligned?
So there's a really old school resource extraction culture here. Coal is a really huge, it's a culture here. It's a heritage here. I spent a few months kind of living in Joes Valley around Carbon County and getting to know the people there. And at first it was this kind of awkward relationship of like, oh, you guys are climbers. You're, you know, hippie liberals, you're tree huggers. We love coal. There was actually a sign on someone's lawn once when I was on my way to the crag that said, fossil fuels are beautiful. And I was like, oh man. Okay. But when you start talking to these people, you realize that it's not because they love destroying the earth and because they're like so against climate change. This is their family. This is their history. This is all they've ever known. They don't know what a future looks like without fossil fuels, without extraction. So I think it's a big thing for us is to be a bridge instead of combating. We all need to come together like, hey, it's really hard. We want to support you through this transition, but you can make a lot more money and be a lot more successful and stable in the future if we consider solar, you know? So I think it's in Utah, especially, there's this old school culture that I think we have the duty of helping them come into the future because it is scary. And I have a lot of empathy for that. And I think that we should all have a lot of empathy when dealing with people who are kind of on the other side of the fence.
That change doesn't happen overnight, especially when it's a culture.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what do you expect when you have, you know, a couple hundred climbers ascend upon your small town in Utah yelling about solar and how awful coal is? That's not exactly a welcome party. You're not going to join the solar festivities. It's intimidating. It's polarizing, so...
I feel like the message is really working to not to meet in the middle, but to communicate in the middle and then come out of that, hopefully with better understanding on both sides.
Yeah, totally. Like we don't have to come and sit around a table and just start kumbayaing right off the bat. But I think that we can all have empathy and understanding for each other and pass in the hallways and shake hands instead of, you know, scoffing at each other. I think that's step one. You know, if we really, it seems like what we're moving towards right now is this like true cultural societal revolution of how we treat our fellow humans. And that's step one, is respecting and understanding and having empathy for the person who you don't understand.
Treating them like humans.
Yeah, treating them like humans. Even, you know, even the people who are, we're so against and that really aren't aligning with our values. They're humans too, and I think there's opportunity for us to really all come together.
For listeners who aren't sure where to get started, do you have any resources for a beginner to learn about the current issues that are going on with conservation and environmentalism?
I mean, there are so many great organizations right now that are providing resources and providing ways for people to take action. And I think from working in a nonprofit, I know how exciting that is for all of us to see people wanting to get involved. And we want to empower you, and we hope that you ask us questions. Even if it's, hey, I don't know where to get started, I would love for you to ask me that question anytime, any day. But there are great resources where you can type in your zip code and find out who your local representatives are. organizations like Outdoor Alliance, Protect Our Winters, Sierra Club are all working towards creating kits for people to be able to get active on certain issues. So, you know, if a public lands heist bill comes in, maybe Sierra Club will put together kind of like a one-sheeter that'll let you know, here's who you call, here's what you say, here's what you do. And I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of that throughout the next 4 years. Because the easier it is to get people involved, the more likely they are to get involved. And we want you to get involved. I totally know it's scary and intimidating, but the first step is to dive in. Pick your issues, too, that you care about, because there are so many. If you're a winter sports person, head to PAL. If you're really into public lands and like BLM and national forests and all that are kind of your thing, check out Outdoor Alliance. You know, if you're a cyclist, look up IMBA. There's so many different outlets that you can really tailor your activism to who you are as an individual.
And you're going to be writing a weekly column for Outdoor Industry Association about current events, right?
Yes, we actually started that the week before OR. It's called In Case You Missed It, The Outdoor Report, and it will come out every week on Wednesday. And it's really just a pulse of the industry. The biggest stories and what I've really been interested in including is ways to take action on some of these topics that we're talking about. And it's great because it's a conversation space. It's not promoting anything from any one organization. And they've really given me free rein to use my voice in spreading these issues because it's bipartisan. It's not loyal to any brand or any sport or anything. It's really what I'm hearing, what you guys are sending me, and what I think of it. And I would love to see the column really start to become a conversation starter, good and bad. I think, you know, a little controversy is a good thing sometimes.
If you want to learn more about Katie and the work that she does,
you can find me online on pretty much any social media platform with my name, Katie Bouet. You can also find me on themorningfresh.com, which is my blog. And you can check me out every week on the OIA website, outdoorindustry.org, with the In Case You Missed It Outdoor Report.
Katie wanted to end on this note for all you listeners.
It's a really hard time for us all, but I definitely want everyone listening to keep the light close to you. There's so much light that's coming out, and there's so much opportunity, and it's been really beautiful to see everyone come together, and I'm upset with what's happening, but I'm also so energized by being surrounded by such amazing people that are so motivated and so passionate. I'm rolling up my sleeves and holding up my fist in solidarity with everyone. And I don't want to say I'm stoked, but I'm stoked.
Need proof that your voice matters? Largely due to public demand, on the night of February 1st, the Utah representative announced he would withdraw H.R. 621, a bill that would have instructed the Secretary of the Interior to give away over 3 million acres of federal lands. I hope you enjoyed meeting and learning from Katie as much as I did. Learn more on our episode page via she-explores.com/podcast. In 2 weeks, we'll air an interview featuring Jerry Cole, a board member of Public Lands Alliance. She tells us about living in the Alaskan bush in the 1960s and 1970s, why she and her husband decided to buy Camp Denali, a for-profit lodging within Denali National Park, and more importantly, why Camp Denali's mission is, in part, to have as small a footprint as possible.
As kids, unless we can touch the earth, roll in the grass, listen to songbirds, sit in the shade of a tree, feel the wind and rain, know the colors of the sunset and the sunrise, sit in silence away from even the man-made frenzy of our noisy world. Unless we can experience these things, we're going to eventually cease to believe that untouched nature really needs to exist.
Thanks to our sponsor, Oru Kayak. If you enjoyed this episode, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you stream podcasts. It helps other people find She Explores, and it goes a long way. Music is by Mind's Eye and Dr. Rinkel, Halogen, Anon, Lee Rosevere, and Josh Woodward. Until next time, have fun out there. Bye.